Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szöveg értése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on the CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There are three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD, in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is about 30 minutes long. Good luck.
Listen.
Task 1. In this section, you will hear some information about the White House in Washington, D.C. Your task will be to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know, because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true, write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true, B means false, and C means that the text does not say. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proud.
In the late 1700s, it was decided that the United States needed a capital city. The first president, George Washington, picked a site on the Potomac River, midway between the northern and southern states. This spot would come to be called Washington, District of Columbia. Pierre L'Enfant, a city planner from France, designed the new city. He decided to place the Capitol building on one hill and the president's house on another hill. George Washington held a contest for the best architectural design of a president's palace. Among the competitors was Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence and an architect. His design was entered anonymously, signed only with the initials AZ. It didn't win. An Irish architect named James Hoban won $500, a piece of land, and of course the honor of having his plans used in the final design. Work on the house began in 1792 and took more than 8 years to finish. President George Washington oversaw construction of the White House, but never had a chance to stay there. He died on December 14th, 1799, 1 year before it was completed during the presidency of John Adams. While James Madison was president, from 1809 to 1817, the United States went to war with England. On August 24th, 1814, British soldiers sailed up the Potomac River and set fire to the White House. It took 3 years to rebuild the White House. It was the biggest house in the United States until the Civil War. It was redecorated in 1881 and again in 1902 by the presidents at the time. And each change reflected the style of the times. It was completely renovated in 1949 when Harry S. Truman was president. In 1960, when John Kennedy became president, his wife Jacqueline redecorated the White House to display the beauty of American furnishings and art. The gardens outside were beautified and enlarged. At various times in history, the White House has been known as the President's Palace, the President's House, and the Executive Mansion. President Theodore Roosevelt officially gave the White House its current name in 1901. The White House has 6 floors, 2 basements, 2 public floors, and 2 floors for the first family. There are 132 rooms and 35 bathrooms on the 6 levels to accommodate all the people who live in, work in, and visit the White House. With 5 full-time chefs, the White House kitchen is able to serve dinner to as many as 140 guests. For recreation, the White House has a variety of facilities available to its residents, including a tennis court, a jogging track, a swimming pool, a movie theater, a billiard room, and a bowling lane. The White House receives approximately 6,000 visitors a day.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proud.
In the late 1700s, it was decided that the United States needed a capital city. The first president, George Washington, picked a site on the Potomac River, midway between the northern and southern states. This spot would come to be called Washington, District of Columbia. Pierre L'Enfant, a city planner from France, designed the new city. He decided to place the Capitol building on one hill and the President's House on another hill. George Washington held a contest for the best architectural design of a president's palace. Among the competitors was Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence and an architect. His design was entered anonymously, signed only with the initials AZ. It didn't win. An Irish architect named James Hoban won $500, a piece of land, and of course the honor of having his plans used in the final design. Work on the house began in 1792 and took more than 8 years to finish. President George Washington oversaw construction of the White House, but never had a chance to stay there. He died on December 14th, 1799, 1 year before it was completed during the presidency of John Adams. While James Madison was president, from 1809 to 1817, the United States went to war with England. On August 24th, 1814, British soldiers sailed up the Potomac River and set fire to the White House. It took 3 years to rebuild the White House. It was the biggest house in the United States until the Civil War. It was redecorated in 1881 and again in 1902 by the presidents at the time, and each change reflected the style of the times. It was completely renovated in 1949 when Harry S. Truman was president. In 1960, when John Kennedy became president, his wife Jacqueline redecorated the White House to display the beauty of American furnishings and art. The gardens outside were beautified and enlarged. At various times in history, the White House has been known as the President's Palace, the President's House, and the Executive Mansion. President Theodore Roosevelt officially gave the White House its current name in 1901. The White House has 6 floors, 2 basements, 2 public floors, and 2 floors for the first family. There are 132 rooms and 35 bathrooms on the 6 levels to accommodate all the people who live in, work in, and visit the White House. With 5 full-time chefs, the White House kitchen is able to serve dinner to as many as 140 guests. For recreation, the White House has a variety of facilities available to its residents, including a tennis court, a jogging track, a swimming pool, a movie theater, a billiard room, and a bowling lane. The White House receives approximately 6,000 visitors a day.
That is the end of Task 1. Task 2. In this section, you are going to hear an interview with someone whose voice sounds familiar to everyone who lives in Budapest. Your task is to circle the letter or letters of the correct answer or answers in the boxes on the right. Please note that in this task, both answers may be correct. However, there is always at least one correct answer. This means you will have to circle 1 or 2 letters. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again. But this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Welcome on board. The next stop is Senater. Change here for regional buses.
Does that sound familiar to any of you out there? Well, I'm sure it does. At least to those of you who live in Budapest. When I first heard it on the number 6 tram a few months ago, I could hardly believe my ears. The announcement wasn't only in perfect English, what's more, in perfect British English, probably for the first time ever in the history of the Centre for Budapest Transport, BKV, or BKK, as it is now officially called, but it was read out absolutely professionally as well. I thought it would be worth a few phone calls to find out a bit more about the person behind it all. And at long last, here she is, Rachel Appleby. Welcome to the studio.
Hi.
First and foremost, how did you get involved in the project to start with?
Good morning. Well, sometime in the summer last year, I received an email and was approached by one of the officials from BKK's PR department. But quite honestly, I have no idea who originally recommended me to them, although I have an idea it was actually an ELTA student. I immediately said yes to the request, although not without reservations. Although I trusted what they wanted me to say on the trams implicitly, I did want to have a say in how these things were said. So in fact, we might not use the most British English announcements, but I'm confident that the phrases used are easily understandable by English-speaking tourists, which is what matters most.
So all you got was a rough English translation of what they wanted, and you sort of rewrote it to make it sound more English.
Actually, when I go to the studios, I'm given a list of phrases to record, and I read through it first, and I might suggest one or two changes. At the moment, the announcements are mostly only on the 4-6 trams and the airport bus, but I've done many more recordings. These are slowly being uploaded, so I'm sure you'll be able to hear me on the underground too in the coming weeks. Actually, it wasn't as easy as you might think. After the first batch of recordings, I took a ride on the 4-6, and I wasn't very happy with what I'd done. Some of that was to do with wording, but also with how I spoke. We did some more recordings in the early autumn. I'm much happier with it all now, and it's becoming easier.
Your Hungarian sounds pretty good to me in the recordings. How good would you say it is, really?
Well, it's okay. I don't actually use my Hungarian much, you know, working in an English-speaking environment, so I don't get much of a chance. But on a day-to-day basis, it's fine. I don't have many problems. In terms of the recordings, I've learnt quite a lot. I was told I got some of the stress patterns wrong in the names, Bloche Luisa Ter instead of Bloche Luisa Ter, and so on. So I've had to practice those.
Would you mind telling our listeners a few words about your background here in Hungary?
Well, I work for the School of English and American Studies at ELTA, teaching language, culture and English teaching methodology. I've been in Hungary for 18 years now, and the mere fact that I'm still here shows that I have happily settled into this environment, and I enjoy being an honorary Hungarian.
Rachel Appleby, the new English voice of BKK. Thank you very much for coming in and telling us all about this.
You're very welcome. Have a good journey.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Welcome on board. The next stop is Senater. Change here for regional buses.
Does that sound familiar to any of you out there? Well, I'm sure it does. At least to those of you who live in Budapest. When I first heard it on the number 6 tram a few months ago, I could hardly believe my ears. The announcement wasn't only in perfect English, what's more, in perfect British English, probably for the first time ever in the history of the Centre for Budapest Transport, BKV, or BKK, as it is now officially called, but it was read out absolutely professionally as well. I thought it would be worth a few phone calls to find out a bit more about the person behind it all. And at long last, here she is, Rachel Appleby. Welcome to the studio.
Hi.
First and foremost, how did you get involved in the project to start with?
Good morning. Well, sometime in the summer last year, I received an email and was approached by one of the officials from BKK's PR department. But quite honestly, I have no idea who originally recommended me to them. Although I have an idea it was actually an ELTA student. I immediately said yes to the request, although not without reservations. Although I trusted what they wanted me to say on the trams implicitly, I did want to have a say in how these things were said. So in fact, we might not use the most British English announcements, but I'm confident that the phrases used are easily understandable by English-speaking tourists, which is what matters most.
So all you got was a rough English translation of what they wanted, and you sort of rewrote it to make it sound more English.
Actually, when I go to the studios, I'm given a list of phrases to record, and I read through it first, and I might suggest one or two changes. At the moment, the announcements are mostly only on the 4-6 trams and the airport bus, but I've done many more recordings. These are slowly being uploaded, so I'm sure you'll be able to hear me on the Underground too in the coming weeks. Actually, it wasn't as easy as you might think. After the first batch of recordings, I took a ride on the 4-6, and I wasn't very happy with what I'd done. Some of that was to do with wording, but also with how I spoke. We did some more recordings in the early autumn. I'm much happier with it all now, and it's becoming easier.
Your Hungarian sounds pretty good to me in the recordings. How good would you say it is, really?
Well, it's okay. I don't actually use my Hungarian much, you know, working in an English-speaking environment, so I don't get much of a chance. But on a day-to-day basis, it's fine. I don't have many problems. In terms of the recordings, I've learnt quite a lot. I was told I got some of the stress patterns wrong in the names, Blocher Luisa Ter instead of Blocher Luisa Ter, and so on. So I've had to practice those.
Would you mind telling our listeners a few words about your background here in Hungary?
Well, I work for the School of English and American Studies at ELTA, teaching language, culture and English teaching methodology. I've been in Hungary for 18 years now, and the mere fact that I'm still here shows that I have happily settled into this environment, and I enjoy being an honorary Hungarian.
Rachel Appleby, the new English voice of BKK. Thank you very much for coming in and telling us all about this.
You're very welcome. Have a good journey.
That is the end of Task 2. Task 3. In this section, you will hear some information about stalactites and stalagmites. Your task will be to complete the sentences with the exact words you hear in the text. Write one word in each gap. That is, two words in each item. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Two explorers searching the depths of a giant cave collect various samples of rocks and minerals for research. They've descended into an area never before touched by human hands, nor seen by human eyes, so they must be extra careful not to disturb the natural formations. One false step could upset thousands of years of peace and quiet. But as one explorer absent-mindedly admires the breathtaking beauty of the cave, the other urgently calls out, "Watch out for that stalagmite!" The explorer looks up and makes a horrible mistake. He's mixed up stalactites and stalagmites, and a second later he steps on a precious stalagmite and breaks it. It's one of those timeless questions that plagues us from elementary school on, right up there with, why is the sky blue? Which one hangs above and which one stands up from the ground? Stalactites are the formations that hang from cave ceilings like icicles, while stalagmites look like they're emerging from the ground and stand up like traffic cones. Two formations are also sometimes referred to collectively as dripstone. We can trace the word stalactite and stalagmite back to the Greek word stalosine, which means to drip. This is fitting because it describes how both are formed in nature. Although they look lifelike and a little creepy, stalactites and stalagmites grow simply because of water running over and through inorganic material. Limestone caves, where most stalactites and stalagmites are found, are mainly composed of calcite, a common mineral found in sedimentary rocks. And if you ever forget which one's which, here are two classic memory tricks to get stalactites and stalagmites straight. Stalactite has a T in it, as in T for top. Stalagmite has a G in it, as in G for ground.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Two explorers searching the depths of a giant cave collect various samples of rocks and minerals for research. They've descended into an area never before touched by human hands, nor seen by human eyes, so they must be extra careful not to disturb the natural formations. One false step could upset thousands of years of peace and quiet. But as one explorer absent-mindedly admires the breathtaking beauty of the cave, the other urgently calls out, "Watch out for that stalagmite!" The explorer looks up and makes a horrible mistake. He's mixed up stalactites and stalagmites, and a second later he steps on a precious stalagmite and breaks it. It's one of those timeless questions that plagues us from elementary school on, right up there with, why is the sky blue? Which one hangs above and which one stands up from the ground? Stalactites are the formations that hang from cave ceilings like icicles, while stalagmites look like they're emerging from the ground and stand up like traffic cones. Two formations are also sometimes referred to collectively as dripstone. We can trace the word stalactite and stalagmite back to the Greek word stalosine, which means to drip. This is fitting because it describes how both are formed in nature. Although they look lifelike and a little creepy, stalactites and stalagmites grow simply because of water running over and through inorganic material. Limestone caves, where most stalactites and stalagmites are found, are mainly composed of calcite, a common mineral found in sedimentary rocks. And if you ever forget which one's which, here are two classic memory tricks to get stalactites and stalagmites straight. Stalactite has a T in it, as in T for top. Stalagmite has a G in it, as in G for ground.
That is the end of Task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.